Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. You're listening to the Jay Shapiro Show.
Hello again, everyone. This is Jay Shapiro. This is the last program for the year. And it's a program that is happening at both a high point and a low point. The high point is that this week Israel is signing peace agreements with two Arab nations. It is true that Israel has not been at war with these nations and does not have common borders with them, but they are Sunni Arab nations, and they have decided that the threat of the Shiite nation of Iran is enough to bring them closer to Israel for their own reasons. And it's true that a peace treaty can be abrogated in a moment, but it is a peace treaty with an Arab nation, and that in itself is a reason to celebrate. On the other hand, it's also a low point in that we are in the middle of a health crisis with a virus that has killed thousands of people around the world. And it was expected even less a year ago. And it is a reminder as we approach the season of soul searching, the high holidays, that it is a sober time of the year and is a reason for serious soul searching. It is a sudden reminder of the real fragility of our lives. This kind of thing may come once in a lifetime or not at all. The last big epidemic was the Spanish flu 100 years ago that killed millions of people, including siblings of my parents, who would have been my uncles had they lived. I don't want to sound overly serious, but I think it is really a time to evaluate our lives and our relationships. As serious as it is a perhaps once-in-a-lifetime, if at all, opportunity to do real soul-searching. I don't want to sound too serious, but it is the high holiday season. So with that thought in mind, I want to sincerely wish everyone, all the listeners and everyone, all the best for the coming year, and Ketiva v'chatima tova. May you be inscribed in the book of life for a good and healthy and safe year. Until next time then, Jay Shapiro signing off. Take care of yourselves.
G'day, I'm John O'Vandor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
New shows are posted every Thursday at 7 p.m. Israel time, highlighting the lighter side and advancing a positive view of Israel here on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hello again, you're back with Jay Shapiro. This week we are in a framework between Labor Day at the beginning of the week and the Jewish New Year at the end of the week. So it's sort of a special week, two major occasions. Of course, the Jewish New Year, which comes every year, and the election, which election campaign more or less officially starts on Labor Day, and it's less than 2 months to the American election. So I've spoken about this in the past, but I want to talk about it again because the U.S. elections this year is probably one of the most seminal moments in Western history. The U.S. elections and will be a contest not just between two political figures and two rival parties, but also between what are apparently two opposing worldviews. All the years when I lived in America, and even in my entire lifetime, the two major parties in the United States, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, were, in a sense, they were different, perhaps in economic approaches. Each party was either a little bit to the left of center or a little bit of to the right of center. But this year, the Republican Party is pretty much near the center, and the Democratic Party has moved very, very far to the left, and the people in the party who are more or less running the party are left-wingers, if you will. They're trying to Europeanize the American democracy, which would leave the international system without a democracy. And the American democracy over the last century has saved humanity many times from the various calamities pushed upon the world by the European thought. The United States, the 2020 elections will not be a democratic contest between two personalities and two parties, but actually a contest between two cultures. The Besser Begin Sadat Center for Strategic Studies came up with a study which I think makes a lot of sense, and I want to share it with the listeners because it essentially points out the importance of the election this year. This will be a contest between two cultures and two worldviews. One is the Hebrew biblical culture, which essentially embodies freedom. And the Anglo-Saxon democracies divide their values from essentially Hebrew culture, but the European democracies derive theirs from what's considered Hellenistic culture of freedom, which is different from the Western viewpoint. There's a fundamental difference between the values of ancient cultures that form the crucible of the modern West. The values of the Hebrew biblical culture were derived from what's called universal logic, the laws of which constitute an absolute and eternal truth, and among which is harmony and a coherence that exists that's designed to foster a harmony, including social justice among human beings. And that's based on the values of the Hebrew Bible. On the other hand, the Hellenistic culture based in ancient Greece were derived from what's called human logic, which essentially claims that humanity is the standard that determines good and evil. There is no absolute good and evil. According to the Hebrew Bible, there is an absolute good and evil based upon God. But the Hellenistic culture bases it on humanity and the moral judgments of humans and certain ideas that exist that constitute an absolute truth that only certain elite individuals can discover and impose on others. And that, if you look at the way the Greek culture grew up, the society was based on a very small group at the top who essentially owned the truth. And it wasn't something universal like in the Hebrew culture. Now, European liberalism's reliance on human logic led to the growth of socialist, communist, and Nazi doctrines, which were foisted upon the masses by authoritarian and totalitarian regimes. Now, on the other hand, those people who founded the American system, American democracy, their names we are all familiar with, like Madison and Hamilton and Jefferson and Franklin, including some other British thinkers, They, by the way, many of them read and spoke Hebrew. They adopted the values of Hebrew biblical morality as the basis of the values of the United States. The fact that in American democracy, not only science, but also humanism is based on natural law gave rise to a stability and a prosperity, as well as a capability and principled commitment to salvage and rehabilitate the world for other calamities. The other calamities, primarily even in my lifetime, were set upon the world by Europe's utopian thinkers. And the utopia could be a positive one or a negative one, like communism or Nazism, but it's utopian. Apparently, after the victory over the Nazism and communism at the end of the 20th century, what happened was that American democracy failed to identify the danger of another erroneous theory that developed in Europe called progressive liberalism. That theory, progressive liberalism, penetrated deeply into American culture. Among other things, it claims that the calamities of the 20th century were caused by a lot of truths that emerged in Europe and that prevented similar calamities in the future. In order to prevent similar calamities, deny the existence of a single truth, and dismantling rational subjects that constitute a source of stability and authority. In other words, those things based on the Bible, if you will, don't talk about many truths. They talk about a truth. And these truths include what the way they affect the family and nationalism and the nation state and gender and the military, the police, and more. Because, in other words, there is something higher, a basic truth that we must depend upon to set our values. The problem is that there are many activities and social frameworks that try to change these things. And you can see what's happening on the streets of America today, where there is essentially chaos because everybody runs around with his own truth. And there you can impose it on other people. There are three painful things about American democracy today. First of all, it's suffering severe disharmony socially because there's a long-standing interpretation of the values of freedom that contravenes the original spirit that was based on absolute values. Also, humanism and society have been completely taken over by the ideas of progressive liberalism, and there is no intellectual elite that can mobilize itself to defend the values of American democracy that have lasted and kept the country together for 200 years. So today, there is just everybody walks around with his own truth and feels free to impose it on others. Only the reestablishment of American democracy in the spirit of the original values of freedom and justice can save the America from what could possibly happen in this election. So the reason I brought this up is because I think that the election this year is going to be the most important, at least in the last 100 years, if not in the last couple of 100 years. There are two different philosophies at work, one of the Democratic Party, the other of the Republican Party, and whoever's going to win this election is going to determine the future of America, and by determining the future of America, they essentially are going to determine the future of the world. And I'm bringing this up now because we are now Erev Rosh Hashanah. We are right before the Jewish New Year when we do soul searching and we do what's called Cheshbon HaNefesh. We look into our own souls and take stock of who we are and where we are. I think the same thing is true not only vis-a-vis the Jewish New Year, but also the American election. People really have to look at the different parties and look at the principles that are being brought forth and choose carefully. This is not a time to go back to what you did in the past. The people who voted Democratic always vote Democratic. Republican always voted Republican. This is a very important election. I'll be back after the break.
Hi, everyone. This is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together, we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
You're back with Jay Shapiro. Since we're in the election year, or actually election month almost, I want to say a few words about whether American Jews should really care if the elected representatives are Jewish or not. In America today, a Jewish surname does not necessarily mean that the candidate identifies as Jewish. More than 70% of Jews marry out of the faith in the United States, and only 4% of Jews consider Israel a voting concern, an issue to think about when you vote, something that's been on a decline for many decades. It was very high back in 1948 when the state came into being, but it's dropped significantly. There was a time when support of Israel was a cohesive communal force, but for most American Jews today, Israel is a very distant concern. And for those that care about the Jewish state, the group in ascendancy are conflicted. Some are embarrassed or downright hostile to the existence of a Jewish state and the way it acts. As a consequence, they're being taught that ethnic nationalism, like Zionism, is not good anymore. Ethnic nationalism is considered racism, or it's a vestige of European colonialism. Other Jews say that they support Israel, but they don't like the current government in Israel, so they'd rather see Israel punished. Now, progressive far-left candidates are much more hostile to Israel than even the mass majority of non-progressive Gentile politicians. In the name of supporting Palestinians, a growing number consider the values and ideas of progressive socialism best exemplified by the Democrats of the Squad and people like Bernie Sanders. That is what they consider genuinely Jewish. Most progressive candidates, and some are not Jewish, like the Squad, they get praised by Jews, and they're not condemned at all, even though they are the only members of Congress openly calling for a boycott of Israel. So one of the Jewish candidates said it would be an honor to work alongside the Squad. This is pretty much a canary in the coal mine for what young progressive Jews think and where they will lead U.S. relations in the future, because these young progressive Jews are replacing the traditional liberal Zionists, people like Elliot Engel. So It's a question we have to ask ourselves. Will a progressive Jewish candidate be more likely to fight against Jew hatred than a Gentile elected official? Most Jewish candidates only see anti-Semitism from the far right, and they ignore anything that comes from the left, which is where most of the Jews are. That is a necessity for self-preservation. If you align yourself to a movement that says if you support Israel, you are unwelcome within the progressive community. So, if you see a candidate with Jewish names, that does not mean they care about Israel or anything Jewish. The internecine warfare is not only between right and left, but between pro-Israel liberals and anti-Israel progressives. This was best evidenced about a month ago when the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, was attacked by 150 progressive organizations who demanded that the Anti-Defamation League be excluded from social justice coalitions because of their support of Israel. So, if a Jewish candidate cares only about universal progressive causes, or for that matter, if a conservative Jewish candidate cares exclusively about domestic American issues, why should the Jewish community care about the fact that they're Jewish? It seems the only thing that still unites Jews is the shame and a defensiveness they feel as a community when a Jewish elected official does something shameful. Then you hope it is a Jew of the party that you do not affiliate with. So, we've reached a stage now where the level of antagonism toward fellow Jews is reaching new lows. Those who don't subscribe to the politics, particularly the left wing, with progressive or liberal, are not really worthy of any support from other Jews. A fellow named Eric Mandel, who writes in the Jerusalem Post, noted that a few years ago he had a conversation with a progressive rabbi about the relationship between politics and Jewish values, and he said his Jewish values were completely tied together with his progressive politics. In other words, they described progressive politics as being Jewish. So if you ask someone like this, if someone doesn't follow your political beliefs, can he or she still be considered a good Jew? And the answer is no. In other words, your political position defines your attitude toward your Judaism. An email was sent about 3 weeks ago from the president of J Street, which is a liberal Jewish organization in Washington. The guy's name is Jeremy Ben-Ami. He sent out a Rosh Hashanah greeting, and he said the following: as we approach Rosh Hashanah this year, I find myself unable to extend the traditional wishes for a sweet new year to people unless they push the foreign policy conversation in a more progressive direction. In other words, unless you are a progressive, they don't respect your viewpoint or acknowledge your humanity, so why offer you a sincere Rosh Hashanah greeting? So this may be the very essence of illiberalism and intolerance. So that leaves us asking an interesting question. What Jewish issues are significant to the upcoming presidential election? No matter where you stand, you need to acknowledge that there are timeless moral values that Jews have given to humanity. And you have to realize that when you allow your political position separate you from other Jews, you may be guilty of what we call sinat chinam, baseless hatred. The You have to remember what destroyed the Second Temple. Baseless hatred, Shinat Chinam, something in abundance, really, in today's American Jewish community. For perspective, we should remember that when the Nazis came for the Jews, they didn't care if they were intermarried, conservative, reform, orthodox, liberal, or conservative. So here we are facing the new year this week, and we have to look at our fellow Jews in a more generous light. The fact that we are in an election year makes things somewhat tougher, because I see this in my own family. I can't even talk to them about the election. I avoid the subject. They've never gotten over the fact that Donald Trump got elected 4 years ago, and they're just waiting for Donald Trump to be thrown out of office. And they don't take into account the fact that he recognized the American Embassy movement to Jerusalem. He recognized the Golan Heights belonging to the State of Israel. And he just now brokered a peace agreement between Israel and two Arab countries. And by the way, that's a story unto itself, whether they are really peace agreements, because the thing that's keeping these countries together with Israel is that they are Sunni Muslim countries, and they terribly fear Iran, which is not a Sunni country. It's a Shiite country. So having an embassy in Israel is something that could be taken away overnight. So we are living in America in very interesting times, and a lot of Jews, including very Orthodox Jews, have people in my own family who more or less define their Judaism according to their attitude to the Republican or Democratic Party. So it's a very fascinating phenomenon, and so I avoid talking about it with the family because I don't want to lose any friends or any relatives who won't talk to me anymore. But I won't say what my own political opinion is. But the fact remains that even among many Orthodox Jews, their attitude toward Judaism is more or less a reflection of their attitude toward politics. So it's an interesting phenomenon that never, to my knowledge, existed many years ago until there were liberal democracies like we have today. So it's a phenomenon that we have to keep an eye on, because it may cause a lot of breakups in the Jewish community. I'll be back after the break.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On The Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
You're back with Jay Shapiro, and I want to say a few words about the really big event this week. Israel will be signing two separate documents. One, a peace treaty with the UAE, United Arab Emirates, and the other document, a declaration of intent to make peace with Bahrain, because there was not enough time to draw up a full agreement since last Friday when the agreement with the ties were announced. But it's clear that Israelis also have no time or patience right now for the theatrics of a quadripart signing agreement on the White House's lawn, which is taking place, I think, just as I'm recording this program on Tuesday. Because Israelis are wondering how they're going to be able to make a living when their stores or restaurants are shut down, or while watching their children who are home from school for 3 weeks. And by the way, I have that with several of my kids, my grandchildren are home. One group of grandchildren is home because one of the kids in their kindergarten turned up to have the virus. So they're home for 2 weeks and their parents are stuck home with them. And here we are, the major holiday is coming up now, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. And we are being told by the government that we have to stay locked up for a period of 2 weeks, starting on the first of the Hebrew month. Now, interestingly enough, the Hebrew holidays go from the first day of the Hebrew month of Tishrei till the 21st or 22nd day of the month of Tishrei. So the Hebrew holidays are 3 weeks, and in 2 weeks, we're going to be on lockdown. So people are pretty despairing, and it's pretty stressful over the morbidity number from the virus. Now, there are several other things that are happening because of not just the virus, but because of the agreement with these Arab nations, which are a major breakthrough. There's no two ways about that. Now, according to Nitzan Horowitz, who's the head of the Meretz Party, which is a left-wing party in the Knesset, he said that the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu agreed to freeze settlement activity in exchange for the normalization deal with the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. He said, and I quote, "I learned from official sources there is an official agreement to freeze building in the territories in exchange for the normalization with Bahrain and the UAE. Now, settler leaders have complained for the last month about a de facto freeze. They note no settler plans have been approved or advanced since February. By the way, according to the agreement that was made with the Americans, Israel could have imposed sovereignty over the Jordan Valley on the 1st of July, which did not happen. We are now in the middle of September. Members of Knesset are a little bit upset, or even a lot upset, because Prime Minister is signing an agreement between the foreign ministers of Bahrain and the Emirates, many will ask why the documents were not given to Knesset for review, or why a discussion was not held in the Knesset Foreign Affairs and Defense Ministry. In other words, our prime minister is going to sign agreements with two foreign countries, and interestingly enough, it's not our foreign minister which is doing the signing. It's our prime minister, but the other countries are represented by their foreign ministers. In the meantime, the Knesset has not seen the agreements between Israel and Bahrain and the UAE. So apparently, Netanyahu is for some reason hiding these documents and agreements, because perhaps he has something to hide. We don't know. A lot of the members of Knesset are very happy about the deal, but they're very upset that it is subterfuge of not knowing what's in the agreements. It's a very odd situation. Now, a member of one of the right-wing parties, Yamina, a member of the Knesset named Bezalel Smotrich, noted that the issue of whether or not there was a settlement freeze is something that's very serious. It has to do with the fact that the higher planning council for Judea and Samaria has not met for almost 7 months. The facts are that for the first time since the end of the Obama administration, Netanyahu has prevented the convening of the higher planning council for Judea and Samaria for over half a year, thereby effectively freezing planning. When there is no planning, then very quickly there's no building, obviously. Now, it's a very interesting thing which is happening here, if you think about it for a minute. I'm not a diplomat or a big diplomatic thinker. These agreements with these Arab nations, which are good, there's no denying that, they can be overturned within a moment. In other words, you could one of those Arab nations could say, we now revoke the agreement. That's the end of it. That kind of thing can happen. In the meantime, Israel has not annexed the Jordan Valley, but at the same time, Israel is not giving the Jordan Valley over to anybody. It's not as if the Jordan Valley is suddenly being handed to the Palestinians, and then it'll be difficult to get it back. The Jordan Valley is in Israeli hands and under the jurisdiction of Israel and the rule of the Israeli army. So in that sense, I don't know if the settlers can be that upset. We're not giving up our control over the areas. What we're not doing is applying sovereignty, and we're not building, which is not good. But it's sort of a in-between situation. It's sort of neither here nor there. It's not as good as we would like it to be, but it's not as bad as it could be. So we're somewhere in the middle. Meanwhile, it turns out that the Arab nations are not waiting for the Palestinians to move. The Palestinian Authority Prime Minister called on the Arab states this week to boycott the signing agreement in Washington. And the Prime Minister, the Palestinian Prime Minister, described the signing ceremony as a black day in the history of Arab nation. This day will be added to the Palestinian calendar of pain, according to him. So the Palestinians are appealing for the Arab nations to boycott the ceremony in Washington. And this is happening as several Palestinian factions, including Fatah and Hamas, who don't like each other, they urge the Palestinians to protest against the peace deals. And indeed, on television today, you can see Arabs in Ramallah, where the government of the Palestinian Authority sits. They're not just burning American and Israeli flags, which is a habit they've been doing for years, but they're also burning flags of the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. So there's not too much loss between them. And indeed, the Palestinian Prime Minister said, we call on the Arab states to reject the step and not participate in the ceremony. This Arab normalization with Israel is harmful to Arab dignity and to Arab solidarity. So they're pretty upset about it. But the other Arab nations apparently came to the conclusion that they have no point in hanging around and waiting for the Palestinians to come to their senses. By the way, back in 2002, it's 18 years ago, they adopted what's called the Arab Peace Initiative. It calls for Arab normalization with Israel only after the establishment of an independent Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. And now the other Arab nations are simply ignoring that. So the Palestinian Authority accused the UAE and Bahrain of acting in violation of the terms of the Arab Peace Initiative by agreeing to establish relations with Israel in return for nothing, as they said. They also accused the Gulf states of betraying the Palestinian issue, betraying Al-Aqsa Mosque, and betraying Jerusalem, and stabbing the Palestinian people in the back. And the Palestinian Authority recalled its ambassadors to Abu Dhabi and to protest the peace deals with Israel. So the Palestinians are a little bit upset. It does not seem to bother any of the other Arab nations. And who knows, maybe other Arab nations are standing in line waiting to establish relationships with Israel. There's never a dull moment, particularly in the Middle East. Until next time, Jay Shapiro signing off.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling for the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.